Table for Two, please. We'll do a podcast about TTRPGs, why we love them, why we play them, except we're doing our Expedition for Two. So maybe I should call it that instead of awkwardly inserting it into our normal introduction. Anyway, I am Voltbase Valentine, and with me as always is my co-host Cadbort.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Expedition for Two. Is that it?
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, you said it right.
Awesome. Yeah, an extra special segment of your favorite TTRPG podcast, Table for Two. We are continuing our playthrough segments of Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Today, we are covering the Forgotten Battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Forgotten Battlefields, and then any miscellany in the open world that we want to cover.
Would you call me? Miss a who?
Oh, God. So, did you do any of the open world stuff?
I did not, because I got my ass whooped on most of the miscellany content after the end of Act 1. So I said maybe I'll wait another couple levels before and then go back and do as much of it as I can at one time.
Yeah, I know there was one thing that you did that we didn't talk about, which was the second Gestral Beach.
Correct. Yes. We did. It came up at the very tail end of the last recording, and yeah, we decided that we would save it. Do you want to start with that?
No.
Just get it out of the way.
No.
Okay.
So let's just recap what's going on in the story. Last time we finished Act 1, we lost our sweet baby, our precious little princess, Gustav.
Our beloved Gustav.
And we have been...
We replaced him immediately with Gustav 2.0.
With the scum, the traitorous, the vile Verso, the betrayal.
We didn't even wait for Gustav's body to get cold before we said, hey, do you want some Lumina and his weapons?
Exactly. No, you don't. I don't think you get his weapons, do you? Does he use his weapons?
I think it's his weapons.
Oh, that's really funny and sad.
That was, I'm pretty sure, could be wrong, but that was a specific note that I took down to ask you today about how you felt about that. Let's not get to that yet.
Yeah. We'll come back to that. Anyway, we meet Verso, who has a number of dubious claims about who he is and what his goal is. And he's clearly hiding something. Like, they don't bother with being like, ooh, you'll never guess what, like, he's holding the secret, maybe. It's like, yeah, he's holding on to something. He's not everything he seems.
But the party just kind of takes it for what it is, because he also does a really good job of answering all their questions directly.
Yeah.
So considering he is their only source of truth on the mainland, the main continent so far, they kind of are just like, they attach to him immediately. I mean, there's definitely a little bit of like conflict, a little bit of uncertainty or unease.
For sure, Lune is like, I don't trust this guy. Like, explicitly says, I don't trust this guy.
Yeah. But at the same time, he's the only thing that they got right now to propel them forward towards their destination and goal. Yep. So,
Yep. So in this segment, we just played through the Forgotten Battlefields, a nice short one. Verso says that to get to the Paintress, you know, it's going to be quite a long journey, but they have to pass through this quarry called the Forgotten Battlefields, and make it to a place called Monoko's Station, where they will get some help that will take them further north towards the monolith. Because they're still... I don't know if you ever, like, check the world map to see the scale of things. We're like a third of the way across the map.
Yeah, and it's really confusing, because you look at the world map and you see the scale, right? You zoom out, you pan out, and you're like, oh my God, we're still so far away from the monolith and the Paintress. And then when you're in the game and you end at Act 1 and jump into Act 2, there's a huge horizontal leap in the perspective, right, with how far away you are. Now the monolith is very much on the horizon. It's there, it's present, it's towering. Before, it's like always thinly behind the veil of fog. But now it going through just in the Forgotten Battlefield, which is the entrance to the second section of the continent, is it seems like it's right there, right? There's a few times in the level where the perspective that you have of it, I was like, oh, I'm gonna get there at the end of the level.
And that's a trick of its size, right? It's
Right.
so massive. If you can see it all the way from Lumiere, it has to be massive. And it's also just like a great, just such a great visual, right? This reminder that your goal is so far but feels so close and looms so large.
Definitely makes it feel a little cosmic in nature.
Yes, definitely. So we pass through the Forgotten Battlefields. Mael has the idea that she would like to bury Gustav, and by that I mean the mechanical arm, which is all that they have of him.
And by that, you mean not Gustav.
Yeah, not Gustav's flesh, his corporeal form. Verso tells her, hey, there's actually a really good spot that's like out of sight of the Paintress. It's got trees, it's very pretty. I think that he would like it. I think he would like to be buried there. And so they set off. He mentions that there's like, oh, there's a really bad Nevron that killed a lot of expeditioners here, like thousands of them. But I haven't
Killed
seen him in a
basically,
while.
yeah, killed basically all of them. Like
Yeah.
all the, yeah.
But I haven't seen him in a while, so it's this
It's fine.
it's fine, and there probably won't be like a big boss fight at the end of this level or anything, so you shouldn't even worry about it.
Yeah. And then right in the middle of Mael, like having her moment, her grief-stricken kind of breakdown on the bridge is when the boss decides to show up.
He decides that now is the correct emotional beat for him to appear and raise the stakes and raise the drama and introduce a little action to the scene.
But
He's
little
got
does he know that grief is the worst thing to go up against because now you're
a
fueled with anger.
I really like this boss. This is one of my favorites in the game.
Well, yeah, because you are self-professed lover of Dark Souls, and this is by far the most Souls-like boss that we've experienced so far.
It's so soulsy.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks almost I'll show you a picture at some point of the actually you just look this up. Look up the dancer of the Boreal Valley, I think. If you just look up Dark Souls 3 dance the dancer, this looks like that.
Typing, typing,
Typing,
typing, Dark
typing,
Souls
typing.
3, the Dancer. Dancer of the Boreal Valley. Oh, yep.
Yep.
Very. Same boss, for sure.
Same boss, same boss. This one's more the dancer's more like lithe and graceful, but the two swords, one of them being like light sort of toned and one of them being sort of dark. Yeah. It's very, very similar. Like completely armored figure, all in like this, plate mail. Very, very tall. Yeah. Graceful. It's
Gangly, a little gangly,
little gangly.
spidery in limbs.
Yeah. And then this is something that I really love about this game is it just wears its influences proudly on its sleeve. Says, hey, we also like Dark Souls. Hey, we also love Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
It's just proud to do that. And not in a way that feels like it's like Easter eggy, right? They're not just putting in like, ooh, here's a bonfire from Dark Souls in this little corner, which like 700 games have done. This is just like, no, this just looks kind of like a Dark Souls thing. It still fits in our world. It just
Yeah.
looks kind of like a thing that we also think is cool.
Yeah, and there's plenty of examples that are good examples of how to source, bring source material in from another game or be inspired by something and still have something be standalone to your own themes and lore and setting. So
For sure.
I did when it first shows the duelist, the boss up on the cliff watching from above, and then you get to like right as he jumps, you get to see his full form. And there was a moment of like, oh, yep, there it is. In terms of now I understand why Volpes likes this game. I mean, there's been plenty of it. There's been plenty of breadcrumbs laid throughout the story so far,
This
but
is
this was
just
definitely a,
another,
yeah.
another such case
This was a full
where,
slice of bread that was
yeah,
plopped down.
for real, I love this boss. I just like this area in general. It's cool.
Very
It's
sad.
very, very sad. And we talk a lot about, like, in our last episode, we talked about them, like, doubling down on the emotional, like, weight of when something happens. Like, Gustav dies, and it's really, very sad. And Mael is there to, like, witness the whole thing. And Verso is there to immediately show up and be like, I'm replacing him. And you're like, fuck. Like, I don't want that. And then we go right from that. Two, and here's just an endless field of dead expeditioners. Like, there's no escaping the grief. It's not subtle, but I think it is resonant.
Yeah, and just continuing to hammer in the fact that Mael's not getting an opportunity to grieve, right? And
That
you
no
see
one
that,
is.
right? But it's hitting her especially, right? Because she's younger. She doesn't have the as many years of experience that Ciel and Lune do in the death of watching all their loved ones pass, either going off to the expedition or in the grimage, right? So, it's hitting her especially hard, and it starts to come out right as they hit the bridge just before the boss fight, and then the boss interrupts it again. So it's another moment of like, oh, you don't get to process this yet. But then to have the level kind of culminate in that burial scene, right, and get that closure, I think was really sweet.
It's very good. And it's why I was like, okay, just doing the Forgotten Battlefields is a good, complete episode, because one, the level's not terribly long, but there's, I think, a good amount to talk about, and there's a good balance of, like, story moving forward, we're getting a little more information. There's a very important emotional beat, and there's just some good fun gameplay. So it's just like an overall really good balance, this chapter. Where do you want to start? I mean, we've kind of started already, but
Yeah, we've done a good overview. What does this level introduce that is new, I think, mechanically to the game that we have not seen yet?
I mean, Verso, like, getting to use him, and you learn how he operates, which is, for those not playing along, he has sort of a ranking system. So as he deals damage, his, like, rank goes up for each instance of damage dealt. And that includes, like, using a skill, just hitting something with your base attack, or taking free aim shots.
Yeah, perfection is his mechanic. On a scale of D to S, do you know what that stands for? Do you know what that means?
Oh, no, that's just a very common game style of ranking. It's like a
D to.
letter. Yeah, it's like a letter grade, right? But so it's D. I mean, if it were F, you'd failing. You're not playing the game.
Sure. I'm
But F.
asking if you know specifically like what those letters reflect or if they have like behind the scenes meaning. I'm aware that a letter system is like used frequently in game combat, but
You mean those letters specifically?
yeah,
No,
do they
that's
mean
just,
something in the context of this game?
it's very common in RPGs to go from D to A and then S as being, like, the best one.
Got it.
especially in Japanese games. That is sort of the
Okay.
ranking system that's used. If you've ever played like a Metal Gear Solid or like a, I think Devil May Cry does the same thing where it has like an S tier ranking.
You know, I haven't.
Resident Evil also, I think has like S tier. Yeah, it has S tier. But then it has the like, oh, and you beat the game in like an hour and a half. So that's S tier plus plus. And you're like,
Oh,
oh, all right,
jeez.
wild. Those games are good sometimes. Yeah, so as his perfection rank increases, he deals more damage, right? It's very straightforward. But what introduces a little bit of like a twist to it is that, like the other characters have those like secondary effects on their skills that are triggered by like having a certain array of stains, being in a certain stance for Mael, having a certain number of cards for Tell, for CL. His skills respond differently to different ranks. So there are times in which, and there are skills that let you do this, where you like drop a rank intentionally so that you can get the extra effect on one of your skills. I think it's an interesting system. I, like we've talked about before, you can sort of brute force the combat in this game. So I don't really engage with like balancing my rank. Verso has always just sort of been my like main offensive character. He is just there to hit as many times as possible, and specifically, I have him break enemies. I have a lot of stuff set up so that he can break enemies.
Yeah, it. I was gonna double down on your point of brute force because I felt like, especially in this level, I've been kind of like headed in that direction anyways, which I've talked about in the last few episodes. But I think that this level in particular, I was just having a rough time attempting to even parry or dodge some of their attacks because there's so many Nevrons that you face in this level that are quick succession. Abilities,
Yeah, lots of combos.
and it my character is like not even with dodge, which is the fastest response time, not even making it back from their dodge in time for the other attack to trigger, which is kind of weird to me that that is happening. So I just started base attacking everything, and that was like completing combat quicker than me trying to use the character's combat mechanics. But specifically with Verso, I have found that the ability that gives you triggers like plus 3 AP, if you use that on the first round and then you break on the second round, because now you have over 7 AP, and that's how much that ability costs, then that's like the highest damage output that he does. Unless you are kind of min-maxing his mechanics, his perfection mechanics. So
I think of all the characters, aside from Gustav, I think Verso is definitely like the most bog standard, very simple. I mean, it almost invites you to just brute force and use your best skills. I'm just not very impressed by Verso's like combat style. I mean, visually it looks cool. I like the way that he fights with like dual, like a sword in one hand and then like a dagger in the other. Obviously the like animation work for all of their moves is very cool.
he's
And
got a
he,
lot of like spin, like
yeah,
tricking, kind of off the ground tricking,
a lot of feints.
diagonal jumping, I guess, or diagonal spins.
He's very
That,
aerial.
yeah, which is very cool.
Yeah.
Another mechanic that's introduced in the game is the gradient, or in this level, is the gradient attack and counter mechanic from the Chalier. Nevron, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, but you learn the gradient attack and counter,
Yes.
which I failed to land one of in the like 6 or 7 opportunities that you get throughout this level. So that was fun because those hit pretty hard,
They
and
do.
I wasn't at risk of ever dying throughout this level, but I for sure used all five of my. I don't really ever rest at flags, so I don't have to grind, but I definitely used all five of my party
Oh, the chroma
potions, the
elixirs.
chroma elixirs, yeah, because I was frequently below 50% health because I could not land a single parry and a good portion of the dodges. It felt like it was a big step up from
Yes.
kind of just trash mobs.
Yeah. And that is something that will continue. Again, I've mentioned before that like you never really have to grind in this game. But there will be some sort of spikes in difficulty, and I think especially on the act breaks. We'll talk more about what that means in Act 3 when we get there, but yeah, from Act 1 to Act 2, there's definitely like, ooh, and all the open world stuff is harder too. You know?
Right.
It's very difficult. And it's sort of meant to be engaged with as like a challenging side activity, right? Where if you beat it, oh, you probably get a really good reward, you know, a good weapon or a really good picto, or just some like upgrade materials that are valuable.
Right.
But it's again, it's none of it's like essential. Except for there is one very essential picto that we will get later. You actually can get it now, but I will make sure, don't worry, listeners, you know, out there about the optional boss that Cadmore will definitely have to do
Okay.
to get basically the best picto in the game. Is this the level in which they introduce gradient attacks for your party?
Yeah, it's
Yes,
like the
okay.
first creature that you face, I think, in the level, the first trash mob is the Chaleer. And it's that because it's introduced, like, hey, all the monsters on this level are going to do this,
Right.
right? And it's just it looks similar to the jump attack where it highlights yellow as the Chaleer is like swinging at you,
Yeah. It
and it
also
kind of
like
comes from the side.
it slows down. There's
Yeah.
like this black like abyss that sort of stretches out from the monster.
Let me tell you, the slowdown speed did not help me counter at all.
I agree that I think it has sort of the opposite effect. Where it
Yeah.
makes it a little harder because I'm used to the fast pace, and now when it slows way down, I'm like, oh, I don't know how to time this.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out the timing for the right trigger counter at all for this one, so.
But yeah, what do you think of gradient attacks? I think it's cool. I think it's very the limit breaks from like Final Fantasy VII, and I think onward, there's a lot of stuff like it. At least there's like, yeah, analogous features in other Final Fantasies, but basically like building up a meter to an ultimate move that usually also does some kind of status or like hits multiple enemies with a big burst of damage. I think they're very flashy. They're very fun visually.
Yeah, I think visually, like you just said, the kind of black and white void, right? It's like sucking the color out of the scene every time that it attacks. Visually is pretty stunning. I guess I maybe missed the meter aspect of that. You're suggesting that the creature that you're fighting, the Nevron, has to build up a
No,
meter
no, I'm
before.
talking about your party.
I don't know what you're talking about then.
Okay, so that's where the confusion comes in. Again, I'm playing on New Game Plus. There's like I have access to features that you don't have. And that includes you will okay, so this is I guess a light spoiler, but at some point you get your own gradient moves.
Yeah, I only think that we can counter right now.
Yeah,
I'm pretty
you will.
sure it was just the counter to the creature's gradient attack.
And yeah, that might be the case. Again, I like some of the tutorial stuff in this game just gets skipped for me because I'm on New Game Plus.
Yeah, right.
So I've had gradient moves this whole run.
Okay,
Yeah.
got it.
But yeah, you will get moves that are gradient charge, and you have a meter that builds up, and it's shared by your party, and so you will be able to do these like big attacks. And
Got it.
this is sort of introducing you to those attacks. I think it's actually an interesting now that I am reminded of how it's laid out, I think it's very interesting that it's like, here's the enemies doing these crazy new big attacks, and then in short order, it's gonna lean in and be like, hey, you wanna do some big cool attacks?
Right. I figured that there would need, it introduces the enemy is doing it, and then it makes sense that after you've had some time to like adjust to this change in combat, you would learn from the enemies on how you would be able to apply it, right? Or you meet like a Nevron, or you meet one of the special Nevron, or you meet one of the unique creatures that exist within the world. It's like, hey, you guys can do that too. You know that, right? Like, if they can do it, you can do it.
And it's gonna be cool.
I
I
hope
like the
so,
looks.
because I feel like with my lack of understanding of combat mechanics, and the appeared increase in capacity to deal damage that the creatures have had in this level, that combat could start to get challenging
Oh
soon.
yeah.
So,
Yeah, it will. Things will get tougher.
in this level, you are also introduced to the fading woman,
Yes,
which is
so we've actually seen the fading boy a
correct.
couple times, and this is something that, like, every time I sit down to play and I encounter this one of these characters again, I'm like, ah, we keep forgetting to bring this up on the
Right.
podcast. But we have encountered a couple of these characters. Do you want to describe what they look like?
They're honestly pretty similar to the curator in the sense that like they're missing half of their face. They're kind of like this, not quite a shadow creature, like they have a corporeal form, but they're void of color. They're kind of starting to almost mist or kind of ash away into the
Almost like a
environment.
gommage.
Yeah. Like they're kind of stuck mid transition, right? And then they are missing like significant portions of their body. Both, I think, so far the boy and the woman have been missing part of their face. If I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, the fading boy only talks to Gustav in the previous dialogues, and the fading woman now is only talking to Mayo. And I don't know if that is intentional to the story, or that is a representation of like how the game wants you to feel who is leading, which party member is like kind of leading the party per se. But from my memory, that is, especially now that I've just played through the Forgotten Battlefield, I am running around as Verso, but when you enter dialogue with the fading woman, it always moves to
It
male as
snaps
the
to
one.
male. Interesting.
Correct.
I think you can speak to the fading boy with other characters. But because I seem to remember speaking to him as Mael.
Okay.
Yeah, you. Interesting. I think I was just playing as Mael when I encountered her in this level, so I don't. Yeah, I believe that sometimes it throughout the game, sometimes it'll snap to one character if they're like you if they have a unique interaction. Although I will say there are like little side encounters with NPCs where if you switch who's talking, it will actually change it a little bit.
Yeah.
Something to be aware of. Yeah, what does she say to you? I'm looking for it in the what's it called?
She's basically
Discussed.
kind of just critical she of Mayel. She says something along the lines of like, oh, you don't, I don't know if it was like you don't know or you don't remember. She's like, you're awake now, and basically, like you don't know what you're doing, or you don't remember what you're supposed to do. And then when you kind of press her on what she's talking about, she stops talking to you. And then when you try to continue to talk to her, you reinitiate the conversation, she is silent. Are you pulling up
Yes.
the transcript?
I am, yes. Here we go. I have a separate. So there's a transcript I've been reading that is like all of the dialogue organized by like level and sort of in the natural progression of the game, but it doesn't have this the like specters dialogue until now. There's a different like page that
Got it.
has just all of those in order by level. So let me just see. Yeah, you can talk to him as the boy as other characters. I'm seeing here that like Lune can talk to him, Gustav talks to him. It's the same
It's probably,
dialogue.
yeah, it's probably just a bug in the game or something that causes it to snap to a different character.
No, it's not a bug. I'm specifically Forgotten Battlefield. If you speak to her with Verso, Lune, or CL, she says, "You may leave. I have no interest in speaking with you." And then if you try with Mael, you get the dialogue. Would you like me to read just what she
Yeah,
says?
please, yeah.
Yeah, she says, "You're awake. Surprising. Have you sufficiently recovered? If so, then you can help. There's much left to do." Mael just responds with like, "What?" To which the woman sighs and says, "I guess not. Pity. I'd hope to return to more important matters, but instead, I must occupy my time with this." Mael asks a follow-up question, just like, "What are you talking about?" She says, "Vengeance. I will settle this conflict once and for all. I really don't have time for this. It's probably for the best you don't get involved. After what happened before, go and play with your friends. I'll handle this."
There's something funny about all of the NPCs in this world that you show up and you talk to them, and it's like they forget that you're a new expedition. It's like, we just got here, but you initiate conversation as if you've talked to us before, or we've been here, or we're aware of what's going on. And it's really good, but it's simultaneously frustrating as a first playthrough because it's like intentionally giving you mysteriously vague tidbits hinting at things, subtly providing context to a larger story. But at the same time, it's like, please talk to me like I'm five. Explain to me what's going on. I don't know what you mean by whatever you just said. Because the characters dot the options that you have for dialogue choices are always exactly what you just said. What? And then they don't explain themselves. They just continue on with their piece.
Yeah, and like you said, it feels like they are talking to you mid-conversation, although you have just approached them. It's very interesting, and I think it's cool. I think it creates a really neat effect of sort of making you feel that like unmoored, unsure feeling. It's continuing to raise that question of like, well, obviously there's more going on that I don't understand. And I'll tell you, this game rewards the New Game Plus playthrough, like story wise. I have a lot more insight into the things that are being said. In most conversations, there is something that's like, "Ooh, if you know, then this is a
I
big
believe,
deal."
yeah. I believe that wholeheartedly. It definitely seems like a, now that you started to mention, the tidbits that you are experiencing with New Game Plus, it for sure feels like they're, a lot of these conversations that you have with NPCs are intentionally callbacks to your first run through, knowing what happens. So.
I mean, the first example I can think of is when you find Mael in the manor and then you walk outside and you meet Noko for the first time. He says, "Oh, Verso's not going to be happy that I like let you get past." And it's like, it means nothing to you. You don't know who that is. And so you just log that away as like, "Well, I'm sure I'll meet that guy at some point." And then there's like a mention of Verso in the Gestral Village. But again, there's a lot of named Gestral NPCs running around. So I think it's very natural to be like, okay, I don't know who that is. When I meet them, maybe I'll remember. And I'd say you probably don't. I mean, I didn't the first time. And
Yeah,
then
for sure.
when Verso shows up, it's like, oh, that's who it is. So then once you've, spent several hours playing with the character named Verso and the character named Verso is speaking, you go back to the beginning of the game and you're like, oh, well, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah. So it's fun. It's a fun little effect. I have talked about this many times, maybe not on this podcast, but I think that one thing that game stories don't tend to play around with a lot are elements of like dramatic irony and being like, well, here's something that you, the player, know that the character does not. Because a lot of games are, especially like role-playing games, are trying to blend the experience of player and character, right? Because they are your avatar. So they're going for an avatar experience where you know what your character knows. As and they try to get that as close as possible. That's why so many games start with like, oh man, I have amnesia. Or like, oh man, I've woken up in this strange world. Because it's trying to give you that feeling of like, okay, there's something you need to know beforehand, and for that reason, there's something your character will know beforehand.
Shout out to halfway through Knights of the Old Republic 1 and then the start of Knights of the Old Republic 2, the Sith Lords.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, and yes, the start of Knights of the Republic 1 also being like, whoa, why am I on board this ship? What's going on?
Yeah, but then to halfway through the game be like, psych, we stole your memory from you. Here's who you actually are.
Yeah. Damn, another Dark Jedi. That's something that's in my head basically all the time.
That line.
Yeah. Shout out Trask Ulgo.
Good man, good man.
He died a
Died
hero.
too early.
That, yeah, much too soon. I could have gone on the whole game with this gruff drill sergeant.
He would have been, hey, his one-liners would have been great to have compared to some of the characters. And can you imagine what, like, if he had lived through the events of one, had made it to two, and then the conversations he would have had with Jolie Bindo.
Oh my God. Just incredible. Just these
Yeah.
two very angry old men talking to back and forth.
Yeah. Or Kreia, or like I just
Trask would have not been able to withstand the pressure of Kreia. I think she would have
just the
killed him
mental attacks
psychically.
con
Yeah.
yeah.
It would have just destroyed him. I think he ha I can see him crumbling in their first conversation.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the game that we're playing. Although, hey, maybe we should do a Knights of the
But
Republic playthrough.
can it be like timed accordingly or organized in a way where it's a playthrough, but it's also a play along with a more civilized ages playthrough of
You want me to pace it exactly the same? No. No. Apologies to people who want to do a deep dive playthrough of KOTOR. Sorry, it already exists. The best one already exists. You should go check it out.
It's true.
It's true.
Shout
So,
out.
yep, shout out more civilized. Shout out Trask Ulgo. Shout outs to a more civilized age. Two things I care about equally. There's kind of not a ton, I think, to talk about. We had a lot of story content to talk about last time, and I think that really the bulk of it is at the end of the Forgotten Battlefield. So I think we can move to like the boss fight and the conversation on the bridge and then the burial scene. Unless
Yeah.
there's anything else you want to say mechanically about the level itself.
Mechanically, I don't think so. We meet Kasumi, the merchant.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only kind of other significant thing to mention besides you get a cool outfit for Mael. I think that is by far the what's it called? The obscure outfit. That's like by
Oh,
far the coolest
it's cool.
outfit that I think that you get so far for any of the characters. It's
Yeah.
like a little raveny on the shoulder,
Yeah, there's like a
right?
wing on her one of her shoulders.
Yeah,
That's
pretty
very
sick.
cool. Are you a costumes guy?
Skins for sure. Like, yeah, game skins.
Yeah, you're a skins guy?
Yeah.
I am too. Not in the way that like I'm gonna spend a bunch of money on them, but it
Yeah, me neither.
look, all right, I've spoken many times with you and with well, maybe not again, maybe not on the podcast, but there was a period of my life where I was playing a lot of Overwatch, and every paycheck it was, let's spend $50 on loot boxes because I want all the skins.
And I think that I have said this before, but maybe the first week that Fortnite came out, I played it. I will absolutely never play that game ever again because I think it's atrocious. But the best thing that they have going for them, and the reason, understandably, that they're so successful, is you can be literally anybody or wear anything in that game. You can be fucking Thanos or Godzilla with the Infinity Gauntlet and a lightsaber and wearing Air Force Ones, like, or
Or
be Cardi B
you could
or
be Chapel Roan.
Chapel Roan, exactly. Like,
Yeah.
it is
Or
like one of the
Rick
best,
Sanchez.
yeah, one of the best marketing, branding, partnerships that a video game I think has ever had. And
Financially speaking, of course.
financially speaking, of course, but like the reason that I have for a greater portion of my life than I'd like to admit, wanted to play and loved playing the Spider-Man games from Sony is because growing up with those comics and getting to see, 70 years of different suits all come to life in that game is and the amount of time that was spent to make it look realistic with light reflection and all the different animation styles is incredible. So,
Specifically with the I think it was 2018 is when that first Marvel's Spider-Man came out. I loved unlocking those skins, and I watched so many YouTube videos that were like ranking them and or breaking down like the comic book history of each skin, because I'm not a comics guy, but I have like an academic interest in comics,
Yeah, of course.
so that was very fun for me. And there's tons of costumes and skins and hairstyles in this game that I think are really cool, and some that are really funny, and
Steel's hairstyle that I have on right now is the curly one. And I put it on, I remember at the end of the last session, and I didn't really like get to see it in the gameplay in the world. And so it was on during this last play session to the Forgotten Battlefield, and every time she appeared in dialogue, I was like, "Ugh, God, I got to take that off. That's bad."
Let me tell you, New Game Plus, throw some new costumes in there.
Does it? Cool.
Yep. New pictos, new weapons, new costumes. No real new encounters, as far as I can tell. Yeah. So I've been playing with some cool new ones. I found a nice set for a couple of characters that is pretty cool. I have them all customized. I didn't really do that my first playthrough. I kind of just kept them to whatever their like canonical outfit was supposed to be. But I really mix and match now, and it's fun. I am also a costumes guy. I love finding new costumes. If anyone who works at From Software is listening, Night Rain needs more skins, please. I need them. I need them. I'll pay real human money, I'm sorry to say.
Opposed to fake human money? Well, I mean, what are your options here?
Well, I can pay in Merc or Sovereign sigils now, but I'd
Did
much
you have to
rather.
spend money in order to get
Nope.
those?
Nope. No microtransactions. Just beat bosses.
Nice.
Let's jump right to the bridge. Let's see. They have a conversation where which is sort of like Mael is the one who initiates this. Actually, let me see. Is there
This is the death, death, death surrounded by death. Everything is death.
Yeah, I'm trying to find this actually. Oh, here it is.
Males emo phase.
Yes. she says, yeah, she sort of goes through it. She breaks down a little bit and says, like, we're, you know, everywhere we go, it's just people dying. And I mean, literally, the Forgotten Battlefield is mountains of corpses. I seriously can't overstate how many bodies are lying around.
What's also really funny about this, and I mean, to some extent, it is an exaggeration because she's, rightfully so emotional. She's in her feels right now, but there hasn't really been a lot of death, like other than killing Nevrons, right? Only, I mean, I guess when they landed, the expedition died, but like they haven't really been surrounded by dying. There's just already been a lot of corpses.
Yeah, I mean, there's dead expeditioners everywhere. It's more of like just the reminder, right? That it's such a big
Reminder.
part of everything that they're doing is that they are surrounded by the dead. And Verso sort of like walks up to her, tries to check on her, says like, "Hey," you know, tries to soothe her, and she, you know, blows up on him. It was a bad idea.
I don't want your condolences.
Yeah, well, this is that's a different conversation where
Is it?
yes, that's one of the camp conversations where he
Okay.
says, like, you know, he starts to offer his condolences, and she's like, "I know what you're gonna say. It's not gonna help. So just stop."
I always felt like that. Okay. I guess I'm remembering it incorrectly, but I always thought that the camp conversation was like a follow-up to the initial. But I guess there's a lot of camp content at the end of this session. Section of gameplay, so I could just be confusing two different
Oh, and
conversations
it
there.
is it's the conversation, yeah, it's the conversation before you go to the Forgotten Battlefield where
Okay.
he tries to offer his condolences and she tells him off.
Yeah.
But she says to him that, like, I thought, you know, you of all people should understand because you're supposed to be, you know, you told us you're immortal. Doesn't this bother you, right? That, like, think
Yeah.
of how many people you've had to bury. CL then steps in, sort of takes her shoulders and says, like, "Yep, okay, we need to keep going." And you know, I love this about these characters, right? These very real emotions, right? Of being like, "All right, I'm gonna take the lead here. You know, my friend is clearly suffering and is not, you know, acting rationally, is in their emotions, and that's fine, obviously. But we need to keep moving. Like, we have a thing we have to be doing." And so she steps in, says, we need to continue. And then Mile starts to fight back. And she says, "No, you know what we have to do." And then she just says, you know, she utters the beginning of the phrase, which is, "When one falls."
When one falls, yeah. I love the constant circling back to that kind of ethos that the expedition has had for their history, right? Their entire history is just like for the next generation, for the next people that come after, for
Yeah, for those who come after. That's one of my favorite just like little writing stylistic devices is to not finish the sentence. Like the implication having so much more weight than just saying it out loud, you know, flatly would be. There's a moment I think about a lot in the Berserk series where two characters who have had a very complicated, very interesting, full of depth relationship, very tumultuous relationship. There is a part where the protagonist, Guts, is like trying to get to him and is, you know, shouting, and says that, like, he's repeating very shakily, like, he's my, and then they never resolve that sentence, right?
Right.
Because to you, the reader, and to this character, it's unclear what their relationship is. You know, there's a lot of answers, a lot of potential ways that sentence could end, and it being ambiguous just sort of demonstrates that the character's in that same space.
And giving the off or not the author, but the audience, the ability to fill in the blank is also really meaningful because it could be something entirely different to you than it is to me, right? We could have our own interpretation of like what that character's viewpoint or perspective is on it. So
Yeah. And in this instance, it's part of a
it's pretty
phrase.
hard lined. Yeah.
Yeah, so we know what it means, but we also like have room to think about the implication of what she's saying,
Right.
what she's trying to communicate. And that is when a boss fight slams into the expedition and destroys the bridge they're standing on. They fall into a ravine, and Mael, he must have heard you because you fall into a ravine full of corpses and blood.
Blood. As soon as she like sits up, and she, again, I mentioned this in the last episode, how authentic and realistic and good the blood looks, especially when it's like splattered across a face.
Yeah.
But getting to see her sit up, just again,
Just caked in
covered
it.
in it,
Yeah.
caked in it, it looked so good.
It looks really, really good. They jump down to help. They get him back up, or get her back up, and then they fight the duelist.
And we get a follow-up, I guess, to the previous boss fight with the Lamp Master, which is a
Two phase fight.
two phase fight, which is awesome. I like that they are continuing that, and I think that you mentioned this when we talked about the Lamp Master, but this is going to kind of be the norm moving forward,
Yep, for a lot of
and
bosses,
that.
this is going to be what you do.
Yeah, and that's very exciting because it adds a little bit of intrigue and complexity to the mechanics. It leaves some surprise and maybe changes the strategy of how you're going to approach the second round. It makes it that much more impactful and devastating. It raises the stakes. And I mean, we mentioned this earlier in the episode, but it's the most Souls-like boss that we've had so far. So getting to
Yeah.
see him draw out another sword. This one was the second one's like bright purple too. It's
Yeah.
like a and it just looks so sick.
Yeah, it rules.
And then to go from like three or four hit combos to
Is
like
it?
seven or eight hit combos.
Yeah, yes, an
You're
insane
like,
amount of attacks.
yeah.
Is it that one deals fire damage and one deals like dark or void damage, I
Yeah,
think?
something like that. Yeah.
Which is like, again, it's not subtle, but it's the whole level has been fire and death, right? Fire and darkness and shadow. So it's just perfect. This Sandfall Interactive, visual motifs. Like, you get it.
You get in this fight too. I think it's at the halfway mark. Maybe it's before that, but you get the shoot, what is the inverse status effect, which now any healing that's applied to you
Does
deals
damage.
damage instead, which I think is a fun mechanic to introduce.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool scene, cool fight, not particularly difficult,
Nope.
but it's challenging in the like you have no hope of parrying unless you have perfected
Yeah.
dexterity as a thing, as a human being. You have perfected dexterity. There's just no chance of parrying.
Look, let me tell you, I came into this with a platinum trophy in Sekiro Shadows Die Twice in my back pocket, and I'm thinking, I could parry anything. I'm a parry god. And no, that's not the case. I'm okay at the parry. I'm decent. I can make it
Not in
work.
phase two.
No.
I don't believe it.
No, I just dodged.
I want to see someone do a no hit playthrough on this game.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. It's been done, buddy. It's
Damn
crazy.
it. That's crazy.
It is crazy. This also introduces a new thing we're going to see a couple times, not with every boss, but with a lot of them, are these flashy like finisher cutscenes, where sort of like the whole expedition gets involved and does like a sick combo. That's very
In
cool looking.
including the expeditioner that's not a part of the active party, which is, I think,
Yeah,
fun.
I saw CL pop up and I was like,
Yeah.
game, you know I using her.
Yeah. She's actually the one that during the cutscene, the finishing cutscene, she's the one that appears first. And I was like, bitch, you haven't been here.
Yeah, you're not part of this. Stay in the
Yeah.
back row.
You don't get any XP for this fight. Go sit down.
She gets some. They get some. Just
I know, I
less.
know.
It's so rude.
I'm saying she doesn't deserve the
Y
XP because she didn't participate.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like these. They're very cool. They're very just like stylish and fun. You know, it's pure Flash, right? But it works, and it also shows, I guess it's not pure Flash because it does show them working together, right? It shows
Yeah.
their bond.
There's a funny scene. The final blow, I believe, is Mael,
Yeah.
but
It will smile and Verso together.
well, that's where I'm going is the final scene is Mael's strike is the thing that kills him, but just before that was Verso's like kind of combo lead up to Mael. But I get that they're like maybe supposed to be happening at the same time, but it shows you one and then it shows you the other.
No.
But Verso is like clearly mid spin. And so he's just in the air, like kind of upside down, not moving when Mael strikes. And I'm like, I don't know what Matrix shit you're doing right now, but
It looks cool.
it looks cool.
Yeah, we finished the fight with the duelist, and then we come to this very, very pretty, like red, deep red, grove. There's one like really big tree, and we get the answer almost immediately if your eyes are open, to why Verso thought of this place as a good burial site, because it's a burial site for a lot of previous expeditions. You can actually, if you switch to like the photo mode, or if you just angle the camera, you can look at the little ribbons that are tied to each of the like headstones and grave markers and see that they are different expeditions.
Oh, cool. There is a level of detail there.
And they bury Gustav's arm there beneath the tree. And we have this really good, it confused me a little bit the first time I saw the cutscene because it's cut in a unique way.
It's a little montage-y,
Yeah,
right? Where
it's
it's like all of their dialogues are happening at the same time.
yeah.
It's kind of what it's intending to show.
Yeah, they're so we get CL, Luna, and Mael all sort of speaking to Gustav, and it's cut. It's like intercut all together, but the implication is that like these are all happening separately, and
Right.
then at the end they all sort of like join and stand there and reflect for a while. These are all
Sad, just heartbreaking, good. Yeah.
just good.
Do you want to read them? Just
Sure. Should I read them in?
can you read them in their full unique?
Okay, so by character.
Yeah, by character.
Yeah. I'll start with Lune. She says, "Rest easy, Gustav. You can leave it to us. When one falls, we continue." And that's it, which is like very her character, right?
Pragmatic, yeah.
Very pragmatic, very focused. But on her face, you know, you can see that there is a lot of like withheld emotion. She's definitely not giving herself like the room to release, but feels, you know, in
And
keeping with the cutscene of her being like, we have to update our journals, we have to like do all these things. It's like, okay, so this is part of her character, right?
well, and this is particularly great because it's another addition to the Lune, like the iconic Lune character, but you get context later in the episode, in the level when you're back at camp of like why she's like this, right? Which I think is a nice touch because it continues to add on to like, come on, girl, just show some feeling, right? Like just show, break down a little bit. It's okay. And then you get a reason why she doesn't later, which is cool.
CL says, "No more dome, just open skies. You were always there for me. Say hi to Soph for me, yeah?" So it's very like very simple. I think CL mentions this a couple times that like being out in the world is like very fascinating to her, and it's like a big part of this experience of just like the sort of openness of it all, not living in this confined space. And of course, Maëlle's is heartbreaking. She says, "Couldn't wait for me, could you?" And then she sort of trails off. She says, "I'll finish what you started. The Paintress, Renoir, they will pay. I'll save them, Gustave, Emma, your apprentices, everyone. I'll save them." And then she says, "We could never tell if you were my brother or my father, but to me you were both, the best brother and father I've ever had. Thanks for being my family."
Yeah, that was the part that got me for sure.
Oh yeah, it's
The
getting
fir
me
the
now
fir
reading
the
it.
first part, the first part, it's definitely like, traditionally sad. But the second part, I for sure had tears in my eyes.
Just unlimited shout out, Jennifer English. Incredible performance.
Now that you told me that in the last episode that she's Shadowheart as well, I heard it in that scene. That was the first time that I've been able to. I think it is the moments of Baldur's Gate 3 where you hear Shadowheart get emotional. I think that's what caused it to click. That's what allowed me to hear it, is the kind of quivering in the voice, the not sobbing, but
That
a
sort of
little bit of
like
sobbing that you can hear behind it.
tight throat.
Yeah. Awards all day for her.
I think she did win an award, so
Good. Yeah.
yeah, well
Keep them
deserved.
coming.
Keep coming. So yeah, that's the end of that. And then we have some conversations at camp that I think are interesting. He Verso explains that like he sort of like lays out where they're going, right? And says like there's going to be a lake, there's going to be this, we'll stop here, we'll get food, and then we're going to go to Monoko's station. We're going to be like up in the mountains. Luna asks, because of course she's the one to ask, why? Why do we need to go there? And Verso says, "We're going to recruit my oldest friend. We'll need the extra firepower because our next goal will be to take down the Paintress's heart." Which is,
Here's the catch.
here's the catch. Yeah. CL asks what he means, and he says, "Well, you can't just stroll up to the Paintress. The chroma there is far too dense. It erases anyone who gets close. But if we destroy her heart, the barrier will fall." Okay. Cool.
Why didn't you tell us this before?
Luna asks, "Okay, so where is the heart? What does it look like?" To which Versa responds, "Yeah, I don't know." I don't know. But it's in old Lumiere.
Yeah. So how do you know that this is what has to happen if you don't know what it looks like?
Yep. Raises a lot of questions, doesn't it? And he doesn't provide satisfactory answers here, but he just says that like, yeah, we gotta go to old Lumiere, which is part of the city that was like, again, when the fracture happened and the world was like literally fractured, blown up into little bits that were scattered about. This was like a chunk of Lumiere that got launched way, way across the continent.
Which is like a perfect, kind of come full circle moment where you get to find yourself back in kind of a where it all started situation. It's not quite that, but getting to bring you back to the place that you started is
It's a real how it all started, how it's going
yeah.
type thing.
Also, there's something odd to me with Verso's slow reveal of the truth. Why is your oldest friend Gestrel? Like, that it's just one of those things where cracks in his story, right, are starting to, and I don't know if it's just like the character's personality, right? Because I don't know what the reveals are going to be. But if I were in the party, right? If I was Lune, CL, or Mael, I would be like, why is your oldest friend a Gestrel? I get that you're immortal. I get that, like, you've been out here a long time, but why is your connection to these really unique and specific creatures like Eskier and Minoko, why are they your friends? Why are they your
Oldest friends.
oldest friends, right? Or best friend, right?
So that's where the like next objective is laid out. We're gonna go to Minoko Station, and then we're gonna go to Old Lumiere and take the Paintress's heart, whatever that may be. You can have some little side conversations. It's what's his face? Or sorry, what's her face? Lune is the one who asks about Agestral being his oldest friend. It's a nice conversation. Mael asks why Minoko lives so far away from the other Gestrels, and Verso says that he is a searcher. They're the Gestrels who like travel looking for other lost Gestrels. He says Mael sort of is like, oh, okay, yeah, the Gestrels that went missing during the fracture. And Verso says, yeah, that, and then he pissed off Golgra. Which I think is great. Just a little bit of like we get a feeling for who this character is already, that like, oh, they're like a powerful warrior and they're on this quest, and also maybe they're a little annoying.
Yeah, right. Which is like, you know, the Gestrels are like clearly very childish creatures. So the fact that, you know, that is a reason why someone has to like travel across a dangerous continent to stay away because they just happen to piss off their chief is like a, I don't know. It adds just like a more silliness to the species. I think CL here also asks about the mountains or the Minoko or like the kind of environment of traveling to Minoko Station, and she's excited about the snow. She asks if there's snow, which I think is really neat because you just mentioned that she is really all about the setting, the environment, the terrain of the world. But just bringing the conversation back to like, hey, the landscape is like a really important part of this setting. Like, we put a lot of time and effort into making this place look really pretty, and having the character's personality and interests constantly bring you back to that. It's just like a hey, pay attention, look around you. Don't just like play the game for combat, don't just play the game for the story. There's a lot more to appreciate here.
And
And the work that we put in.
I think that's one of the things that's so good about the like world map design, the way you walk around it, because there are huge spaces between enemies or between levels where you're just meant to like, yeah, you'll find an item, you know, or find a little side objective or something. But you're also just spending a lot of time walking and just looking at these like really well rendered, really pretty, really interesting, unique environments. So you are getting a lot of time to just sit, reflect, and look around. It's very well paced. She also mentions, and I don't know if this is the first mention of it, but she says, my husband was obsessed with the idea of snow. And it's like, oh, okay, we didn't know that about CL. Well, at least I don't think so.
No, I don't. That I it definitely was shocking when she said it, because I sat up and was like, oh, I don't, because I've mentioned in the past that I felt like she was a little flirty with Gustav. So it was interesting to hear that context to her past life.
You can talk to Eskier. Eskier also says, he says like, oh, that was really sad. And then he asks if Verso was thinking of Julie. Verso says, not just her, but yeah. And then they hug, which is cute. Then there are three, it looks like three. Yeah, three like other little camp conversations that are a little bit longer. If you ask anyone, they will tell you that this Lune CL scene is like the best of all the camp conversations. And I'm inclined to mostly agree. It's just the two of them lying on their back, like looking at the stars next to each other. And this is kind of one of the only times we see the two of them interact. It's, I think it might be the only time they interact, you know, by themselves.
Yeah, without someone else being a middle ground between the two of them.
Yeah. And they just have this really good conversation about like their lives in Lumiere, about, you know, why this mission is so important to them, why Lune likes to, or not likes to, but tries to like keep people out, you know, not be so personable and emotional. She talks about, you know, how her
Losing her
this
parents to the expedition.
yeah, losing her parents to the expedition.
She used to be, at some point, she used to be hopeful. She used to be optimistic, right? And she
Yeah.
thought that they were going to come back. She says that there was this moment where I thought that they were going to succeed and come home and fix everything, and then they didn't.
Yeah.
And how do you cope with that,
Yeah.
right?
And CL says like, "Oh, you know, when that happened, you know, you were there for me, but after that, you just like bailed. You know, what was that about?" And Lune says, "The day I knew my parents had failed, or that day I knew my parents had failed. They were counting on me to finish their work. I couldn't afford distractions." And so it's just like, boom, there it is. There's like the key pivot point in Lune's characterization is that when this happened, she just refused to, you know, grieve, to let that consume her. And her whole life became, okay, we're gonna be the expedition that wins. We're gonna figure this out. Like, and I can't do anything that's going to impede that in any sort of way. And that includes like personal connections.
Right.
And CL, of course, like it's like class back against this is like, yeah, having friends is not a distraction. It's re actually really important. Then they have like a cute little moment where they joke around, and I think they actually move, like they physically move closer to one another.
But and it's really interesting because you get to see CL put her hand down, right? When Lunes is also down on the ground, and it's a very much like we're gonna, comfort each other by holding hands. And then, interestingly, Lune picks her hand back up, and I mean, they do move closer, and it's not meant to be like anything more than, friendly intimacy. But there is a moment where it kind of implies that they're gonna
Hold hands.
hold hands, and then they
Yeah.
don't.
It's good. Just good. It's good direction. It's
Yeah.
good. It's good. Mocap work. Just looks really good. There's a Mael Lune conversation that I feel like there isn't a ton to say about. It's kind of just a repeat, you know, of some of the things that they're saying. They're talking about grief. They're talking about how, you know, there's just grief all around them. It's such a huge part of their lives. And Lune says, I actually will read this part because it's a really good line from Lune. She says, "The pain we feel every time we lose someone, I've tried many ways of dealing with it, running from it, sitting with it, compartmentalizing it, but what I needed was to use it." And that again, like we're
That's
getting
the
a
shove for Mael to like
yeah.
make it productive.
Yeah. They talk about how, you know, they can still feel the presence of the people that they've lost, almost literally, because she talks about like chroma, you know, the magical energy of this world, being like having a, almost a signature of the people who, you know, it passed through. She says, "When I use chroma, I feel it. I feel close to them and
And
they
she,
help me."
yeah. And she basically says, like, feel, use it to feel Gustav, right? Which is kind of an interesting, like, it's a fun, larger lore building for the world in the setting where it's like, what's the additional applications that Lumina could be used for long term, like outside of this story is like, manifesting past loved ones into existence, which is kind of a neat thing. And
It's really, it's very the force.
It's funny to me that you have this scene so closely adjacent to the scene with Lune and CL, because Lune is encouraging Mail to use her grief as like motivation, and then Lune is telling CL that she used her grief for motivation, but then CL's like, maybe you didn't use it the right way. Maybe you could have done it a little better. And it's really cool to like see those right next to each other.
It's a very good juxtaposition. She also says, do you want to know a secret? I have no idea what I'm doing, and I don't think anyone else does either. Which
Which
is
kind
great.
of parallels the conversation that Mail had with Gustav earlier, where Gustav basically said the same thing. It's like, when I was your age, I didn't know shit. I still don't really know shit now. So,
He's like, I think the whole world doesn't know shit.
yeah, you're better off right now at your age than I was or anyone else was at your age. So.
It's great. It's great. I've probably mentioned it before, maybe on this podcast, but it's one of my all-time favorite moments on Star Trek: The Next Generation is Captain Picard and the Doctor Beverly Crusher are stranded on a planet together, and they've been linked like telepathically, by like a weird device, and so they like escape captivity, and they're trying to, you know, find a way out of their situation. Picard says, "Well, we should go this way. This is how we're gonna get out of here." And they start to walk, and they walk like maybe 3 steps, and she goes, "Wait a minute. You have no idea what you're doing." And he's like, "Oh, forgot that you're in there." And she's like, "Oh my God, how often is it are you like this?" And he's like, "Always. I'm the captain. I have to just make a decision, you know, and I have to look like I know what I'm doing." And she's like, "Oh my
Fake it till you make
God."
it.
It's really funny. So I think the last thing that happens is we have a Mael Verso scene, where she thanks him for picking that spot. He says, like, "You know, I'm sorry that like I definitely like came on too strong, right, with being like, oh, well, the condolences, you know, I'm so sorry for what you've lost, and I understand." And it's like she wasn't ready for that.
Yeah. And he also knows that he admits that he knows that that doesn't work. Like, condolences don't do anything.
Let's see what else.
Mail basically
Oh,
officiates Verso's induction into the party to Expedition 33, which I think is really sweet and also terrifying, because it is like, what happens if he betrays them? What happens if the things that he's hiding come back and hurt them? So it's this cool moment of like, all right, yeah, we're gonna trust you. Or Mael, who's I think in some ways like kind of the replacement for Gustav in the focal point of the party. I'm going out on a limb here and inviting you in and saying you're part of the circle now, you're part of the club. But
Which she titles, by the way, she retitles the Expedition 33 as the Disaster Expedition,
yeah,
which is good.
honey, which expeditions haven't been disasters?
I had that exact same thought. But she gives him the like Expedition 33 ribbon, which he ties to his arm, and then you get a new costume where it's his costume with that ribbon attached to the arm. And then it's off to Minoko Station, which will
Off to
be
Minoko Station.
what we do next time. We'll do Minoko Station, and we'll do open world stuff following that. So I think now we can just circle back really quick to any open world stuff you want to talk about, and then we'll be done.
Yeah, the only one that I have to talk about is the only one that we didn't talk about last week, which is the second Gestural Beach.
What'd you think of the volleyball game?
I would say that it was not as fun as parkour. Mostly in that the hardest level is impossible.
Very difficult.
I obviously know that it's not impossible because people have beat it, but I think I spent an hour on it, and I don't think I ever got more than a consecutive round of three returns back. And this kind of doubles as my maybe criticism that's starting to come up more about the combat system with parrying or dodging. But with the multi-attacks, my character is not even returning from the parry or the dodge in time to press it again. Like I'm almost getting attacked a second time by the time that it can physically
Yeah,
dodge again.
it's very tight in a lot of places where it has to be basically perfect.
Right. And so in this same fashion, the
You want to lay out what the game is?
yeah, so it's you on a wooden platform out in the water with a sacapatate on a different wooden platform, a couple yards away from you, and it is kicking. Are they
Gestures,
smaller?
yeah.
Yes,
Yeah,
gestrels
the
at
small
you,
ones.
like gestural kids, basically,
Yeah.
at you, and your goal is to do the little kind of Lumina blast that you do
Yeah.
with the right bumper, and send them back so it hits the sacapatate. And so you basically are breaking each other's platform away so you fall in the water. And the first one is pretty easy, but you have little lights on your dock that show you on your platform that show you your hits basically that you can withstand. And I think in the first two levels, each hit that you take is only represented by one of the lights. But then on the hardest level, when you get hit, it takes away two or three of your
Well,
lights.
there's some like flaming gestures, and those do too.
Okay. It seemed like in the full hour that I spent, every single one of them does
Yeah, on the
more,
third,
two or more.
at the hardest difficulty, it's mostly
Yeah.
the flaming ones.
Yeah. I assume that you've beaten it. But
It's hard. It's
yeah,
not
but
easy.
so comparing it to the combat mechanic though, like in the time that it's taking for the blast to work, I'm getting hit twice more before it will allow me to blast again. So I don't know what's going on because it can't be as, it doesn't seem like it's as simple as timing. It seems like
It is timing. It is, you have to consider the distance of your, like, how far does your hit go? And it actually can stretch, like, you can shoot them back a little less than halfway across the water.
yeah.
Like, by the time they have reached the halfway point, they, like, accelerate a little bit when they start heading towards your
Yeah.
raft.
It's like slow and then it's fast before it
It's
hits.
like right at that moment where it starts to speed up. So it's about halfway across the water, you can hit them back. And so what you have to do is like hit them back right at that moment and then immediately turn and hit them the other one and then hit the other one and then hit the other one. It's like it's really tight, but it is about timing.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's impossible. But it definitely, it's one of those times where it feels like there's a bug in the game because it's like if I can spend an hour on it and not even make incremental progress, it feels like something is off because my dexterity is not bad. My timing is not bad.
Yeah.
But
And
the
this,
window seems so unrealistic.
it's, yeah, it's tough. This is something that I've brought up before. It's like, this feels like a response to other like open world games with our RPGs with mini games that are like frustrating and weird. It's like, well, yeah, we'll just make specifically frustrating and weird ones.
Yeah, or people complain about them being too easy.
Yeah.
And so it's like, fine, fine,
Yeah.
fine.
And
Here
they're
you go.
all gestures, of course. You know, it's
Yeah.
gestures being nonsensical
Yeah.
and weird.
Yeah. Very whimsical.
Yeah, there's like a goofy music playing too. It's
Goofy, what do you mean? It's my ringtone.
the Jestral Beach theme playing basically 24/7. It's good stuff. Good stuff. Anything else you want to say? Or I think that kind of closes us out.
Let me check my notes, see if I. Oh, the one thing I. So this is something I complained about for Gustav's like personality and dialogue early in the game, and I think that it's starting to grow on me a little bit as we're experiencing other characters start to use it. It is the kind of silent treatment that the game uses with the ellipses in order to, represent communicating grief between characters. And you get to see that with CL and Mael in conversations during this level. I think in camp, where there's like three dialogue chains back to back to back, where like, they start to talk and then something important or tricky comes up, and then it's like ellipses, Mael, ellipses, CL, ellipses, Mael. And it's saying like, sometimes you can express a lot by saying nothing, right? Or
Yeah.
the read between the lines. But it's starting to feel like the game is using it significantly more. And this is the first time that I kind of like took note of it. And so I'm just saying like it's growing on me a little bit as I'm starting to see other characters start to use it. Whereas it was frustrating in the beginning because all the other characters seemed like they could hold conversation and express what they wanted to, whereas Gustav just couldn't some of the time. And so I do appreciate that. That is something that is happening more frequently, and I think that it's intentional and is good.
Yeah, so that'll do it for us. Remember to give us a 5-star review if you enjoy the podcast.
Try
Remember,
six.
try six, see if they'll let you do it. Just try it.
Yeah. Specifically, contact whatever platform you listen to your podcasts on and let them know that there should be a 6-star
Yeah.
just so you can review us.
Tell them, hey guys, I found the first 6-star podcast.
I found the first podcast that is deserving of a 6-star to be added to your review system.
I think that's us. And if you also think that's us, maybe you can go to patreon.com/tableforTwoPod, kick us some money, and get a monthly bonus episode, including some additional content to come in the future when we decide what it is.
Starting soon?
Soon? We'll figure it out.
Soon? Maybe.
But you get monthly bonus episodes where we play micro RPGs. This month on the main sort of feed, we're doing Lordsworn. We're having a really good time playing Marin McAdam's Lordsworn. I think it's actually Lordsworn Volume 2 or Version 2. But we have a special guest, Shiloh, who's a lot of fun. And I'm gonna say that this is my favorite series that we've done so far.
I just really love that you address it as we are currently having fun playing Lordsworn.
Yeah, that we recorded 2 months ago.
Yeah. We're having a lot of fun right now this past weekend as
Yeah.
we played our Lordsworn session.
Yeah,
It was
absolutely.
a blast. It is a blast. We're playing it right now.
Playing it right now, actually. I've got one microphone that's recording this and another microphone where I'm recording Lordsworn.
Oh, hold on, Shiloh. Yeah. No, it's we're in Expedition 33 right now. Can you just hold off for us? Yeah, okay, thank you.
Honestly, it's so rude that he keeps interrupting.
Seriously. Shout out to Shiloh. I mean, whatever the opposite of a shout out is.
Shout down?
Shout down, shout in.
Shout in.
Shout in to
Whisper in.
Shiloh.
Whisper in. To Shiloh and be like,
There's a
fuck
raise
you,
your
dude.
hand function of Zoom for a reason, okay? That's all I'm saying.
But anyway, you should check that out. I think it's really, really fun. I think that the game is really cool, and I think we had a fun time with it.
And you want to give a quick reminder of what the upcoming segment is as well after Lordsworn?
Yes, after Lawrence Ford, we will be playing Go-Go Golf, which I'm very excited by. It was designed by DG Chapman. It was published with Possible Worlds Games, which I highly recommend you just check out their website because Possible Worlds Games has a lot of really cool games, including they're running the Kickstarter to publish the full version of Realis pretty soon. Pretty soon.
And just shout out to anyone that has the audacity to make a tabletop RPG about golf, because it's awesome. It's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I think we're gonna have a lot of fun with it. So, yeah, and subscribe wherever you are. Just follow us so you get these episodes right when they come out. We release episodes every Friday, and for the foreseeable future, we will have these Expedition for Two episodes every Monday. So that's two episodes a week you're getting. That's twice as many
Yeah.
opportunities to listen to us dumb motherfuckers talk to you about video games and tabletop games.
And twice as many opportunities for you to like and subscribe and donate to our Patreon. So,
Exactly. You know what? Why not sign up twice, make another account, and donate twice as much?
we won't tell anyone if you do it.
I won't tell. I'll tell my mom, but like in a good way, a bragging way. Not like I'm gonna tell your mom.
Well, you
Not your
can't.
mom,
Yeah.
I mean. All right. That'll do it for us. I'm feeling pretty full. I'm full up on podcasts. Ooh, yum. My cup runneth over.
Yeah, said no one ever. Check, please.